Empower Radio presents The Miracle of Healing with Lisa Campion. Meet healers, learn different modalities, and hear empowering stories of people on their healing journey. The Miracle of Healing on Empower Radio. Here's your host, Lisa Campion.
Hi, I'm Lisa Campion, and this is The Miracle of Healing on Empower Radio, where conscious people come together to explore the world of healing and heal the planet, one person at a time. So, you know, couples, being married, having a partner, it's not always the rosiest picture that we can imagine. Sometimes couples fight a little bit, sometimes they fight a lot. Sometimes those fights really help us find our comic relief in life, but other times they can really threaten the survival of the relationship. Fortunately for us, we have people like Dr. James Crichton, who is the author of this book called Loving Through Our Differences and several other books. He's worked with couples and conducted training and communication between couples for nearly 50 years around the world. And I'm slightly jealous because he is talking to us today from Hawaii, where it's dead of winter here in Boston. But he's in a beautiful, warm place. And I think that being in a warm place opens your heart more. I don't know. What do you think about that, James?
Well, yeah, you don't have to feel like you've got to resist the world somehow or struggle against it. You can just be wide open, so why not?
Why not, right? So I've been working as a healer and an energy healer and intuitive for about 30 years myself, and I know that relationship issues are, you know, really on the fore. When people come to me for a session, it's usually that there's, you know, seems to be on the forefront of the problems that people have in life. How do we get along?
Well, actually, my wife and I, on that scale of fight a little or fight a lot, my wife and I were on the scale of fighting a lot. Ah. And a lot of my interest in this whole field has been how to reduce the pain. And if I found anything that worked, then I'd pass it on. And so this book is sort of the first 50 years.
Oh, that's fabulous. I'm so glad you did it. So my mother is a therapist, and she's been a couples therapist for a really long time. So I kind of grew up believing in couples therapy, you know, really believing in how effective it can be and how productive it can be. Because I think that we can get into trouble with each other, and if we don't have good communication skills and we don't understand the concept that you really are talking about in your book, this concept of separate realities, which I totally understood what you were saying in that concept, but I'm wondering if you can explain it a little bit. What does that mean?
Well, let me start with a very simple example. My wife and I go to a movie. I think it was a lot of fun. She's bored out of her gourd. She doesn't like car chases and things like that. And when we get out of the movie, if I say, well, that was a great movie, if she's in a not too good mood, she could, not only was the movie bad, but I'm adolescent for thinking it was good and off, we're off and running and so forth. The truth is that it is absolutely true that I enjoyed it, and absolutely true that she had fun, that she was bored to tears, and that all of us in life all the time can go through experiences, identical experiences apparently, and have entirely different emotional reaction. Nobody else has exactly the same set of life experiences, child rearing, people around them, college, military, whatever, that shape how we interpret events. And the emotional reality is created by the fact that things don't just happen to us and we have feelings. Things happen to us and we give them meaning. And it's that meaning that I give that's different than the meaning you give. And that creates a separate emotional reality.
Mm. It's sort of like we all have this like unconscious assumptions or experiences or feelings. And I think unless we understand this concept of separate versions of reality, we assume that everyone thinks and feels the same way we do.
Yeah, and many couples start out there because one of the things that brings people together is that they have a lot of commonalities. And some couples are even shocked to discover that they can go through an experience and one partner has an entirely different interpretation of the other, because that silly little movie thing can apply whether it's child rearing or the kind of courtesies that we owe to each other, or how we spend money or sexuality or any of those things. We can have very different emotional realities and start out kind of on the assumption that if you have a different emotional reality than mine, there's something wrong with you.
And is an emotional reality different from like a perceptual reality?
No, I probably could use that term too. Except I want to be very clear that the person having the experience really thinks the other person did hurt them.
Right. Like you made me feel this way, like that kind of stuff.
Yeah. Because it happens, we bring the meanings to things so quickly that we don't see our own engagement with it. Every now and then in life, you can see it when you don't have enough information to understand why the other person reacted the way you do. They did. I used to have it when we had kids and they were supposed to be home at 12 and it's now 1 o'clock and I'm freaking out. And I run through a whole series of interpretations from there've been an automobile accident to they're defying authority and on and on and on. And I can see my feeling changes with each interpretation that I give it. And that's one time I could catch myself providing the meaning. The other time we usually can see that it's different is when the other person has an entirely different reaction. And there's somebody we love and care about. And so the starting assumption has to be we each have a separate reality. It's entirely appropriate that we each have a separate reality. It's okay for me to have mine and okay for the other person to have his or hers.
Yeah, it's so good. And you have really a process that you take people through in your book, the sort of steps about how to explore this concept.
Yeah, I started out with some simple skills because there are some skills that help a lot. There's a listening skill and a sending skill and then a problem solving skill. These are not radically new or different. Other books have had them and so on, but I've tried to keep it real simple and real practical. Incidentally, if you're hearing a weird noise in the background, I have a neighbor that sometimes feels inspired to do his carpentry exactly when I'm on the radio.
Well, he's definitely living in his own emotional reality.
His own reality. And I confess my meanings get me to annoyance and a real hurt. One way to think about it, a couple, he was raised in an immigrant family where it was really important to show the world that they had arrived, that they had triumphed over the difficult time they had starting out, and they had made it. She, on the other hand, was raised in a working class family where it was really important not to rise above oneself, not to show off, not to do something that made it look like you think you're above somebody else. And what happened was they wanted to buy a car, and he wanted to buy a Mercedes-Benz. And for him, it meant showing people, I'd arrived, I've made it, we've succeeded. She, on the other hand, was horrified at the prospect of being in a Mercedes-Benz because to her, that was putting herself above other people. It was bragging, it was ostentatious, et cetera, et cetera. And so it was just a car, but it had all of these meanings and bringing in all these family myths and family roles and so on. That was, they were really hung up on this for several months, actually, trying to work through how they were going to how they were going to get to drive a car that gave both of them what they needed.
Yeah, I feel like it always, in a way, goes back to our family tribal, sort of our tribal patterns. And we don't even really know that we have them often. They're like the water we're swimming in, you know, or the air we're breathing. We can't see those until we go into a conflict with somebody that has a different set of them.
Marshall McLuhan once said, the culture is like a glass dome. As long as you're inside, you don't know you're enclosed.
Right.
And family culture is like that as well. And I like to think of it as he brings his rules, she brings her rules. And if you're going to communicate effectively, you somehow got to negotiate our rules.
Right. That's great. And that's sort of like one of the things you talk about in your book is using people's differences as an opportunity to grow, you know, to grow. And I always thought of that too, as committed relationships are so much more difficult than people think they are, but they're incredible opportunities to grow and evolve, and like they're people growing machines. And how do you do that? How can couples use their differences as a way to grow?
Well, take this example of the car. That brought up all kinds of issues for this couple about their family rules. And they could begin to see that the rules were there. In fact, she had defied the rules to some extent because she'd gone to college, which was also getting above yourself. Mm. And she'd had to deal with it then. And then now she had to look at, do I really want to leave my life based on a rule, a family rule that says I can't show off, I can't be above myself, I can't engage in certain kinds of activities. And he too wanted to be released from the burden of always having to show he was a success. It was tiring, if nothing else. Mm. And so they could use that difference about the car, they could use that to do quite a bit of personal growth.
Mm. That's good. And you say that communication is really the key to this. What kind of advice do you offer couples for communicating? Because I think when we get stuck, that's where we break down, right? When we get,
right.
Yeah.
Well, the first thing I observe is that resistance breeds resistance. If you contradict everything I said, I'll simply say it louder and more emphatically and with choice words and so forth and so on. And so when we get in an argument, and what we try to do is to out-talk the other person, out-yell them, come up with a better argument, and so on. All we're going to do is stimulate the same thing back from them. So a lot of listening has to do primarily with extending acceptance and understanding. And there's quite a difference between acceptance and agreement. It's one thing if I say, I hear you're really, really mad about such and such, instead of, you're right to be mad, I'd feel that way too, and so on, which is agreement. What we're after is acceptance, where what you do is understand the way the other person feels, accept it's okay for them to feel the way they do, and then begin to share yours. So there's a listening skill and a sending skill in the book that are really important. And we also work quite a bit on how to avoid escalation. One thing I've noticed is that kind of predictable stages of escalation, you start off with, you left the cap off the toothpaste, and then you move on up to a bigger issue. Like, it's not just the toothpaste, you're always so messy. And then pretty soon you're irresponsible in life. And then pretty soon it's not just me that says this, your mother says it too. We took a vote among the neighbors and they all agreed. And it just kind of keeps going up and up and up. And each person then goes to the next stage in an effort to top the person of the past stage. And so on. This is one where the hour rules thing is really important, because you can, as a couple, set rules that when you can see yourself engaging in escalating behavior, you back off, or you mutually back off, and so on. And my wife and I have had to set some. We we agreed not to use other people as ammunition. Mm-hmm. So I wouldn't tell her, your mother said such and such. And we also, if we start to expand the issue, like moving from the toothpaste cap to you're utterly irresponsible in life, we both still do it sometimes, but the other person will flag it and we'll kind of grudgingly back down to what the original issue is. Because otherwise, it can just totally get out of control and consume the relationship.
Right. Yeah, and I love that. That's really good. And you talked about a sending skill. I'm not sure I've heard that term before. What does that mean?
Well, what I'm after is, if, going back to the movie, if I walk out of the movie and say, boy, was that a great movie, she's going to say, like heck it was, and she's starting to cutting down the movie and so on. Because I've sent a judgment, and she sends a judgment back accordingly. And when you send two judgments that contradict, we'll fight each other. Mm. It's just the nature that they're two truths and they can't coexist side by side. On the other hand, if I send the feeling of, I really enjoyed that, she might be surprised, but she could also say, I was bored to tears. And both are true. Mm-hmm. So part of what sending is about is getting down to sharing the actual feeling that you experienced. So you're describing your experience to the other person rather than judging them.
Right. So it's like, okay, that there's a difference.
Yeah, it's there's a skill to it in learning to. We sometimes use the term I messages. Because usually the feeling starts with, I'm feeling this way, and I'm feeling that way, and so on. Instead of you messages, and you messages are, you did this, or you did that, or something external, and so forth. Now, I caution you just to say, I feel you're a dirty, rotten soul. So,
I know, right? I was going to say that. I remember teaching my kids that I thought I was being so clever. I'll teach them how to use I statements. And the first one I got out of my son was, I think you're a jerk. Yeah. And I'm like, that's not really an I statement. Yeah.
So he'd have to go back to, I'm feeling hurt, or I'm feeling angry, or something like that.
He was only like 16, so I don't think that... that he was ready for that, but
you weren't insisting.
No.
Right. But the if you're going to learn from differences, this skill is really critical, because you've got to get back inside yourself to what you're feeling and why you're feeling that.
Right.
And just the skill of sending it as a feeling, mm-hmm. Instead of as a judgment, pushes you to get clearer in your. At least I find myself as getting much more access to what I was feeling about things as I disciplined myself and how I was sending my message to other people.
Right. Yeah, because a feeling is like your feeling. It's not a statement of like the total reality of everything. Like, I feel like I didn't like that movie. It's like it's your personal thing and allows other people to have a different experience than you.
Yeah, I can say I'm really uncomfortable in the Mercedes, because to me it feels like trying to be above people or something. Mm. That at least is reporting the experience without putting him down for
right.
you show off or you're so shallow you have to have a Mercedes to boost your ego, and on and on we go.
And what about this concept of pursuers and distancers?
Well, I can draw my own experience. My wife was raised in a family where conflict was done fairly openly, although usually in an accusatory manner, and pretty loud. You had to be prepared to accept volume. I was raised in a family where conflict just wasn't ever done. And as a kid, all I could do was tell that the adults seemed sort of itchy, but I wasn't sure what was going on. So when we got married, her natural tendency was to push forward, try to get it resolved. And my natural tendency was to pull back, want away, get away, think about it, so forth and so on. And it turns out that these two types show up in marriages a lot. That in this case, my wife was the pursuer And the pursuer stops being anxious only when the issue is being dealt with. The distancer is almost the opposite. Won't feel comfortable unless he can get away from the threatening pursuer and so on. So we'd have to, she'd move forward, insist on talking about it. I'd move back and resist being talked about it and get into all kinds of issue about I'm being controlled, having to deal with everything in your sense of timing, and on and on and on we'd go. Finally, got to the point that I made peace with the fact that, yes, I would talk about it. I didn't have to talk about it the instant she had a feeling. But what would happen is, okay, we'll talk about it after dinner. And once we'd agreed on a time to talk, my reaction was usually, oh, the heck with it. Let's get it over with. Because it turned out one part of me was working on a control issue thing. I couldn't stand being controlled. And another part wanted to get the threat of whatever it was handled and dealt with and so on, much like a pursuer would.
Wow. Yeah. So many interesting dynamics. Now, what about the 5-minute rule? Did you talk about the 5-minute rule? I just think it's okay. Powerful.
This is a rule that probably saved our marriage. We found, even though we had both trained and were conducting training on listening skills, that there were just plain times we couldn't listen to each other. It was like you just didn't have enough room inside to contain somebody else's feeling. And a therapist friend of ours told us a technique that works for us, which is that it's sort of a super rule. Either one of us can invoke a 5-minute rule, and by mutual agreement, we both will stop dead doing whatever we're doing. And so you may not want to invoke the rule in front of friends or something. We'll stop whatever we're doing. The only topic of discussion is who goes first. If you can't agree on that, flip a coin. That person gets 5 minutes to say whatever he or she wants. Then the other person gets 5 minutes to say whatever he or she wants. And if that doesn't do it, then you do another round. And the reason it works is most of the time when we're talking, disagreeing, about every 20 seconds, the other person is telling us we're bad, stupid, or crazy for feeling the way we do. And that just causes us to get defensive and reactive and escalate and so forth. If for 5 minutes nobody's interrupting you, telling you you're wrong, you begin to kind of get the heat off. And I actually find that at about 4 minutes, I'm even boring myself. So that it may not end any more spectacularly than, well, I haven't got any more to say. That's not bad. From there, you can think about it. You can do problem solving, support, and so on. But the critical thing is that you're making sure that each person gets at least 5 minutes to say whatever he or she wants, any way they want, preferably without any loud body language.
And using I statements, too. Yeah. Like,
It helps if you use the I messages, and we'd include that in the rule, except then you're interrupting each other to say, oh, you didn't do an I message, and off you go again.
Right. So what about a reframe? What's a good example of how, what that is and how we might do it?
Okay, reframing. The goal is to be able to change your meaning, change the way you interpret the event or other person's behavior, so that you have more options available to you. Example, a guy who would like to go out with his buddies and hunt and so on. When he'd come home, his wife would have all kinds of questions for him. Who did you see? What did you do? So forth. And he began to feel like she was quizzing him and insisting on being in charge and all the rest of the stuff. He was able to reframe that as, instead of her behavior being a control thing, her behavior was telling him, I feel insecure. I don't know whether I'm loved. I feel neglected, so forth and so on. And he found that when he came home and engaged in reassuring behavior, loving behavior, and so forth, the whole situation changed radically.
So we are talking with Dr. James Crichton, who wrote this fabulous book called Loving Through Your Differences. James, how can people get in touch with you and buy this wonderful book that you have?
Okay. If you want more information on the book itself, you can go to James L. Crichton at CRIGHTON.com. The book's available at all the standard booksellers, Barnes & Noble, Amazon, IndieBound, which is the Association of Independent Booksellers. It's Loving Through Your Differences, Building Strong Relationships from Separate Realities.
Thank you so much, James, for being on our show all the way from Hawaii. It was such a pleasure, and I hope this, people really struggle with their relationships, so I hope everybody gets a chance to hear this and maybe find a wonderful solution for themselves.
Thanks, Lisa.
Thank you, and thank all of you guys for joining us today on The Miracle of Healing, where we are healing the planet one person at a time right here on Empower Radio.